Hey everyone, John here. This week's episode is going to be rated for explicit. We're going to be talking about a lot of sensitive subjects as well as having a few swear words here and there. And to be honest, it kind of lends itself to the episode. So this week's episode is explicit. So if you are a parent and you have your kid listening, I advise them not to listen to this week's episode. If you do, that's on you guys, not on us. We've given you this warning. And we hope you enjoy this week's episode. And if not, we'll see you next week. Take it easy, everybody. Bye. What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Sarah Connolly as we sit down and finish paying tribute to the musicians we lost during the 1990s. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here in the Because Maybe Network. Hope you're doing well today, and we are going to continue our conversation of paying tribute to the musicians who passed away during the 90s. Either they were 90s musicians who passed away, or some of the greatest musicians of all time who passed away. I enjoyed last week's episode in the sense that, you know, it was cathartic. And, yeah. I want to thank everybody who has listening to it, and I hope you're listening to it this week. I hope you came back, and we're going to continue. We have some names that we hadn't talked about yet, and I just hope that, you know, you guys, like I am, feel cathartic at the end of this episode. But before we go ahead and get started, check out becausewemenetwork.com. That's where you find all of our archives. Go check out Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for all the latest news. And don't forget to check out either Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music. That's where you find this podcast, especially if you're listening to it on a service that you don't usually listen to. So, for example, you're listening to it on Apple when you usually listen to podcasts on Spotify, okay? So I'm going to join in the conversation with me and Sarah, and I will talk to you at the end of the episode. So take it easy, everybody. All right, we're going to move on to something a little more depressing.
Okay.
Hang on one second. Let me get my notes together. And we're going to talk about Jeff Buckley.
Okay.
Singer-songwriter. Specialized in blue, folk, and alternative rock music.
Yes.
Again, a fine, fine young songwriter. Fine musician.
The thing about Jeff Buckley, though, as great of a songwriter as he is, what's the one song that he's known for?
The one that he didn't write.
Yes. Which we'll get to that in a minute.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay. I mean, so, but yes, Jeff Buckley, he was a singer-songwriter who specialized in blues, folk, and alternative rock music.
Yes.
Yes. So he released the 1994 classic Grace and then spent a whole 3 years touring for the same album, which you could do in like blues and whatnot. I mean, you know. Yeah.
I mean, He was talented in the sense that he made every show different.
Yeah.
I mean, for 3 years, you've got to make every show different.
Oh, yeah. You'd go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Excuse me. So, Buckley was in the middle of recording his second album.
Calling My Sweetheart the Drunk.
Mm-hmm. I thought that he had more than two albums.
No, he only lived to see one of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because he was so
prominent.
Yeah. Okay, so he had recorded many four-track demos for the project for My Sweetheart the Drunk and was waiting on his band to get from the Northeast to Memphis to finish the full recordings. So, and then, like random creative people do, he decided to get real spontaneous and go swim in the Mississippi River one day. And I was caught on the wake of a boat and unfortunately drowned.
Yeah.
And his body was found 6 days later on June 4th, 1997.
So let's talk about his music for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I, considering the library of music that I have,
okay,
I'm not familiar with his work.
Right.
It's one of those, I'll know it when I hear it, mm-hmm. but I don't know it directly.
Yeah, the only Jeff Buckley song most people know. Okay, let me back up. Here's the thing about Buckley. Buckley was a musician's musician.
Yes.
So But and I think he would have been more commonly known for his own work had he been around longer.
Yes.
As such, he left behind essentially an album and a half's worth of material. And I mean, because the others, they were demos. Yeah. So, and one of those was a cover song that would become his, what he's known for.
Yeah.
So, but his stuff, the way that he played and the way that he arranged and the way that, you know, he was with unique. His lyrics and everything, inspired other musicians.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a list of musicians right here. You've got Ben Folds, mm-hmm. who's not known for his guitar work, but, mm-mm. you know, his songwriting is right. off the chain. Adele,
mm-hmm.
Muse,
mm-hmm.
Travis,
mm-hmm.
and then, two names I did not expect, Eddie right. Vedder and Chris Cornell.
Right.
Because they had their success before Buckley.
Yeah, but you can still be inspired. You can still be
inspired
somebody,
by
yeah.
someone, but it's just like, you know.
Right.
It's odd to see somebody, you know, take that inspiration
right.
after their best work is behind them.
Yeah.
You know, now, Ben Folds was a musician around about the time starting out as a mm-hmm. you know, a proper musician, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Muse and Travis. You know, they were in the mid-90s just getting their stuff together.
Right.
Now, I know Muse didn't come around big until early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just Eddie Vedder and Chris Cornell did that. Those shook me.
Right. And his album Grace is considered one of the finest pieces of music released in the 90s and of all time.
Yeah.
His demo collection and unfinished work were hits commercially. But his magnum opus is his cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
Yeah.
And that's what
he's known for.
He's known for.
I mean, as far as covers go, it's a beautiful cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful song to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But you combine the hauntedness of the way he sings it, his untimely death, mm-hmm. and the fact that he, you know, he wrote one of the best albums of all time. A lot of people said that he's a generation's lost, you know, music hero.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would have been, what, 1997, releasing his second album. That would have been kind of around about the time where you were listening to music right. religiously.
Right.
And, you know, I guarantee you, knowing your musical taste, he would have been in your rotation in 97.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, It's, like I said, a generation's lost artist. And there's somebody else we're going to talk about they never said that about.
Hmm.
Mainly because he released more albums. But,
yeah,
you know, it's yeah. It's, you know, it was a sad day when he passed in the world of music.
Yes.
Now, like I said, I'm not too familiar with his work, but he was such a big loss that he had to be represented here.
Yes. Okay. So the next person that we're talking about is Michael Hutchence from NXS. This one's got some trigger warnings in it. They should all have trigger warnings, actually. But there's some topics here that, in case folks are a little sensitive. But Hutchence was an Australian singer and songwriter, most famously for NXS.
Yeah. He did solo work.
He did do some solo work. He's mainly known for NXS.
Yeah.
So. His drug use and alcohol intake were. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, his antics are legion amongst the British music press.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you got to understand, to be. The British music press and the British gossip press to begin with is really, really hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't sneeze without people from the Scum newspaper writing a full-page article about it and keeping on about it for 6 months.
All right.
You know, and then you combine that with the other gutter rag magazines and newspapers out there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm sorry to say they're pretty much all of them. And, you know, every antic that he did ended up front-page news.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, you know, front-page of the gossip section.
Right. Right. Now, Hutchence had some issues. Hutchence, let me back up for just a second. One thing, and you know, in 1992, he suffered a fractured skull in an incident with a taxi in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And he waited too long before he got treatment.
Yes.
So, anytime you have a brain injury of any kind, it messes with you.
Yeah, the longer you leave it, the worse it gets.
Yeah. So, this led to him having depression and a host of other issues.
Yeah.
And
it killed his mental health.
Yes. For a while there, he had no taste, literally.
No.
No, his taste buds, like, did not register with his brain. So he had just issues. Also, he had an extremely, extremely tumultuous relationship with Paula Yates.
Yes.
Okay, so...
another darling of the British media at that time. Yes.
Paula Yates was... she was the ex-wife of Bob Geldof.
From Live Aid, if you don't know who Bob Geldof is.
Or he also played Pink in the Wall. so it's sort of like, where do you know Tim Curry from? Where do you know Bob Geldof from? No, but Bob Geldof...
he's a musician and artist in his own right.
Yes. So Bob Geldof and Paula Yates had three... girls, I'm not sure, but they were some of the first celebrities to name, like, one of them's name was Peaches, the other one's name was
Pixie,
and I'm not sure was that just the two, and then she and Hutchins had Tiger Lily, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so. Paula and Hutchins had just a very tumultuous on again, off again. It was basically kind of like Amy Winehouse and her husband. I mean, there was arguing, and we love each other, we can't stand each other. We love each other, we can't stand each other, whatnot. So, and there was a lot of drug use, an obscene amount of drug use. So, they had gotten married. They had had Tiger Lily. Tiger Lily ended up for a while with Bob. And who was like, somebody's got to give somebody a stable something. So, because Bob already had the other kids.
Yeah, so it was a case of, let's keep the kids together and family together.
Right.
And Hutchins didn't want that. It's my kid, my kid, my kid.
Yes, but Hutchins wasn't in a position.
No.
No.
Not even close.
No, he was not. When I mean, okay, I'm never one for let's take somebody's kid and give it to somebody who they're not even related to. But I am for, dude, you were not good at the time.
Yeah.
So, and neither was Paula. Paula was,
Think Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan and multiply that by 50. And that's what...
with a heroin problem.
With a heroin problem. Well, that's why I mentioned Lindsay Lohan.
Well, no. Lindsay was coke, I think. But anyway. I mean, but like, it was bad. So...
I mean, even Cookie, it makes him like Courtney Love look sane. And
yeah.
I'm not exaggerating here because, you know, we're fans of Courtney Love. Ha, 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 ha. I mean, Courtney's drug problem is legendary.
Right.
But... It was nothing compared to what Paula Yates went through.
Yeah. So Paula, Hutchinson had been arguing with Geldof. And in 1997. And they had been arguing about Tiger Lily. And he's staying at a hotel. And the guests heard him arguing with Geldof in the early hours of the morning that he died. And he ended up killing himself. Now,
there's some debate.
Hence the trigger warning.
This is an explicit episode. Don't worry.
Okay. The way that he was found, he was found in a similar situation that David Carradine was found, in that strangulation mixed...
autoerotic asphyxiation.
There you go.
That's the technical term for it.
So, take from that what you will.
That's one of the things that led to Paula Yates' death. She wouldn't accept that as...
No.
She wouldn't accept the suicide. She was adamant that it was the other. And
I mean, but this is a woman who showed up to his funeral. She dyed her wedding dress black.
Yeah.
And then shortly, no, it wasn't too long after he died that she committed suicide, or she OD'd. I want to say it was within a month or so.
No, it was a little bit longer. It was a couple of years later.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was an overdose, but it was, ironically, we mentioned the kids.
And her daughter died the same way.
Her daughter, it was on her daughter's 10th birthday that she passed.
Is that
Pixie's birthday?
And is that, well, which one is the one that the one of the daughters died the same way?
Peaches,
yeah.
And she OD'd on heroin and posted Instagram stuff before
of her and her mom.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's a little. Ooh.
Yeah. So Hutchins was considered a wild man of rock and roll, and he lived the part, dating many models and female musicians of his day. And as we said, he was a solo artist as well, and his posthumous solo album was released in 1999, and NXS, and it ended up carrying on without him for the next 15 years before breaking up in 2012.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was an animal. He really, really was.
And yeah,
I don't mean that like, you know, he was feral. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. I mean, there's wild and then there's wild. And he lived the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle. He wrote the book on it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, people. And again, a shout out to the Gutter Press of the UK, because mm-hmm. they enhanced his reputation, and they hounded Paul Yates for years and years and years, just like they hounded Amy Winehouse, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just,
yep.
Fuck the press in the UK. Excuse my language.
I almost thought you were going to say fuck the police. And I was like, well, that's a good seg. Because the next person that we're talking about is Eazy-E. Yes. So, we had just mentioned earlier that Freddie was one of the first musicians, major musicians, to pass away of AIDS.
Yes.
Okay. So Eazy-E was a member of the NWA. He is referred to as the godfather of gangster rap.
Yeah.
He also has a Christmas album that is a strong favorite of mine. Or at least a song, because now it's in my head now.
Well, just like Snoop Dogg does affirmation for kids these days.
Yes. So... he also worked behind the scenes as well, signing groups like Bone Thugs and Harmony and like scouting and things like that.
Yeah.
He died on March 26, 1995, to AIDS-induced pneumonia.
Yeah. And just like we mentioned Freddie last week,
mm-hmm.
just like Freddie, it was not long after he announced he was sick,
right,
that bang, he was dead. Now, it took a little while longer.
Right.
It was more than a day, but it wasn't more than a month.
No.
Maybe two at the most.
Yeah. So, Eazy was considered a pioneer and legend of rap music. Because, you know, NWA was the hottest rap act in the early 90s. But eventually, Eazy fell out with Dre and Ice Cube.
Yeah, I mean,
his solo albums are really anti-Dr. Dre.
and you listen to songs, excuse my language, you listen to songs like Bitches Ain't Shit, and that's a more or less a diss track to Eazy-E.
It went both ways, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but every one of his albums charted on the Billboard charts, and over 75% of his singles as well. And, of course, he, along with the other members of the NWA, have been subjected to a number of biographies and biopics, most famous being the recent, I say the recent within the last 5 years, Straight Outta Compton movie. And I know Cube's son is in it. Is Eazy's son in that, too? I want to say yes.
Actually, it's been longer than 5 years. It's been 8 years since the movie came out.
I'm so old.
I can't find it. Okay. So, yeah.
Somebody just let us know.
I'll trim that section down, don't worry.
Cool beans.
But now Eazy-E, NWA were like real
groundbreaking.
They were influential. I mean, we mentioned Public Enemy too. You know, they were East Coast, West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but NWA was straight California, straight Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most influential stuff that they can do, that you can do, and some of the stories of their road trips, you know, the trips on the road, just they were told not to sing Fuck the Police.
Yeah.
And they did, and then were chased out.
How you can sound British and Southern at the same time saying
it's
that
20 years of being here, Neely.
Police. Okay. Anyway. But yes, before we get to our last person, we're going to do a little.
We're just gonna say a couple of words about a couple of other people who passed away. We haven't got time of death written down for any of these guys, but just what they meant to the music scene and you know what they're. So we're gonna start with Stevie Ray Vaughan.
That was sort of self-explanatory. He's one of the best blues guitarists who's ever lived.
Yeah.
So, and then Frank Zappa, who is also extremely influential. Yeah. Shannon Hoon, Blind Melon.
Yes. Were they one-hit wonders?
No.
Because the most famous song only reached... That's the only yeah, their most no, famous they, song they, reached
they
us.
Had, yeah, no, they had more than one song. You've got a person missing off of here.
Well?
And that would be Brad from Sublime.
Ah.
So, yeah. But Steve Clark from Def Leppard.
Yep.
Rob Pilatus, which is... sort of what's the word I'm looking for?
Musician in name only.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that. That's cruel to say, especially these days. But he is one of the members of Milli Vanilli. So
yeah.
And
Milli Vanilli were known for the lip syncing scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, didn't another major label make the same mistake? Rumor has it, this story's gone around, that the chick from the Meatloaf video, I'll Do Anything for Love, the record labels tried to sign her.
She was a model.
She was a model, couldn't sing.
The woman singing in the video was his hairdresser.
I thought it was one of the Weather Girls.
Mm-mm. No. No, you're thinking of the CNC Music Factory.
Okay.
God, what is the song? CNC Music, their biggest hit. Hang on, y'all. We're going off on some random tangents today.
Everybody Dance Now.
Yeah, okay. That's the one. That part is her. Anyway, so, sorry, guys.
Sorry, random.
But then you've got, Stephen Marriott from the Small Faces.
Yes.
Wendy O. Williams, who not only was a punk rock icon, but 80s kids, she is also the namesake of, or the Bowser's Wendy.
Yes.
Is, yeah,
Wendy
was
O.
named
Williams.
After her.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then you've got Dean Martin.
Yes.
And Frank Sinatra. Yes.
So they some of the jokes that were made about Frank Sinatra when he died were cruel, and you know, I'm going to repeat one right now, so I apologize if I offend anybody, or when I offend anybody, but somebody said Frank Sinatra unplugged Old Blue Lips is back.
Oh, that is horrible.
That is horrible.
My favorite Frank Sinatra quote, though, is Rowan Farrow, the reporter. The investigative reporter. He is Mia Farrow's son. Now, he is technically, legally, the son from her marriage to Woody Allen. However, if you look at Ronan Farrow and you realize that Mia Farrow used to be married to Frank Sinatra before she was married to Woody Allen, and even though they divorced, they were still very friendly up until Frank died. Like, extremely friendly up until Frank died.
They're familiar with each other.
Yes. So, but if you look at Ronan Farrow and you look at Frank Sinatra,
Billie Jean is not my lover.
Right. Ronan Farrow does not look like Woody Allen at all.
To be fair, Woody Allen doesn't look like Woody Allen these
days. Well, no, he does. Woody Allen's all kind of squirrely and Ronan Farrow is not. So, but people ask Ronan Farrow, well, you know, is it true that you could potentially be Frank Sinatra's child? And without breaking a sweat, everyone is like, couldn't we all potentially be Frank Sinatra's children? So, yes.
I tend to go with the Ron Farrow thing. So, anyway, all right.
So,
y'all, okay, you need to do, take this and put this at the beginning of the episode, and you can leave it here too, just because I'm. Warning, Sarah's ADD is very, very wild as we're recording this. Proceed with caution, because yes. I am all over the place.
That's fun.
Yes. So, last but certainly not least,
we're going to talk about the name that people are probably thinking they've left out.
Yes.
No, we wanted to put this one last. We wanted to start big and end big.
Yes.
So we're going to end it with Kurt Cobain.
Yes.
I mean, what can be said about Kurt Cobain that hasn't already been said 1,000 times?
Yes, and many mediums. So,
for those who don't know, who've lived under a rock.
Say, if you are listening to us, but you don't know who Kurt Cobain is, algorithms are wild.
Yes. I mean, we've covered Nirvana albums on this podcast. We've covered Hole albums. And I say Hole because he was married to Courtney Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Courtney Love's a big influence in your life.
Yes.
Aside from the major drugs, of course.
Yes.
And the freakouts.
Yeah.
And the marrying a rock star.
Yeah. Okay. So.
But for those who don't know.
Yes. Kurt was one of the founding members and lead singer and songwriter of Nirvana. He was one of the pioneers of the Seattle grunge scene.
Yeah, Seattle music in the 80s and 90s blew up. And mm-hmm. you know who's responsible for that?
Hmm.
R.E.M.
Yes.
They were considered the best college radio station act of the 80s, and they toured extensively college campuses and small mm-hmm. venues mm-hmm. where young kids, and they inspired a whole generation of people, especially in the Seattle area.
Very cool.
Yes.
Cobain never took to fame well. He wanted to play. He wanted to play and make money so that way he could support his playing. But
Cobain lived comfortably, not necessarily superstardom.
Cobain did not want the fame that came with it.
Which, unfortunately, if you were as talented as he is,
yeah.
is a byproduct of it.
Yeah. And Cobain had a long-standing heroin addiction, which was linked to he had a really bad stomach illness.
Nobody knows what that illness was. It was never disclosed.
Well, I don't know if he ever actually, I mean, I don't know. He might have. I don't know, but...
I don't want to speculate and make diagnosis or anything like that, but I mean, there are a lot of illnesses now that are that are a lot common for people who've had a lot of stomach issues, mm-hmm. like for example Crohn's, mm-hmm.
Diverticulitis.
Yes, thank you. I would have stuttered my way through that.
But I mean, I also wonder if it wasn't something to where had he gotten, I mean, where he knew he might have known where it was, but one of the only treatments would have been something major like a colostomy bag or something like that, and he just couldn't
handle it.
He couldn't do that. Yeah. But anyway, the heroin addiction is what he said was the only thing that can dull the pain of his stomach issues. In March of 1994, he overdosed on champagne and Rohypnol in Rome. Upset, friends and family staged an intervention.
Yes.
Which did not go over well.
They never do go over well.
Yeah, but it...
But it's needed at that point. They never go over well, but they're needed at that point.
Right. But an enraged Kurt finally admitted he needed help and checked himself into the Exodus Recovery Center. After several days, Cobain jumped the fence and headed back to Seattle. On the plane, he... sat next to Guns N' Roses bassist Duff McKagan, who Duff was sober at that point, wasn't he?
I'm guessing so.
I think so. Yeah, Duff. We're going to have to do a thing on Duff at some point. Duff is amazing. Do you know much about Duff?
I don't. I don't just know he's a great bass player. That's all I know about him.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a thing about Duff. Anyway.
You know that's not his real name, right?
Yes.
It's a stage name.
Yes.
And he took it from Paul McCartney and somebody else. I don't know who that somebody else was, so maybe I shouldn't have brought it up. But but now, McKagan knew of... Kurt Cobain hated Guns N' Roses. Like he
no, he hated Kurt the music. Cobain hated Axl Rose. They had a huge rivalry, to which at the 93 awards, MTV awards, they're walking the red carpet. It's Kurt and Courtney with baby Francis.
Yeah.
And Courtney's talking to somebody, and Courtney is just, she's loud. It's just
she's who Courtney she Love. Is.
Yeah. So he, Axl, started screaming across the red carpet, "Hey, can you tell your bitch to shut up?" And Kurt, just without missing a beat, look over at Courtney and says, "Hey, shut up, bitch. See, it doesn't work."
Because he did have a very, very dry sense of humor.
Yes, yes.
But no, on the plane, they sat next to each other, and he knew Cobain hated members of his band.
Right.
And was kind of shocked to see him being so friendly.
Right.
But he wasn't performing at that point. Right. A lot of people have said Kurt Cobain, a lot of his friends have said that he was one of the, you know, one of the best guys they ever met, and you know, all the tributes that pour in, you know,
he was
a friend you like to have as a friend, right?
Right.
And if you were an enemy, you were an enemy. So he was shocked to find him, you know, friendly and, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies and everything like that, and knew that there was something up. McKagan, like, his instincts were dead on.
And I looked at him, he was sober at that point. McKagan had a big history of drug abuse and got sober. And not only did he get sober, he got smart and got smart with his money and learned how to invest stuff and whatnot. And he actually, one of his big things today is working with baby musicians, and it's like
you're going to
lose everything and be broke at some point in your life if you don't know how to take care of your money.
Yeah.
And he actually gives like courses to musicians. It's weird. It's very cool, but weird. But yeah, so McKagan is a wonderful guy, but and I didn't realize that they were next to each other on the plane. But after Cobain got back to Seattle, he was then spotted sporadically before he disappeared for good.
Yeah.
And his body was found in the attic, or the over the garage. Over the garage on April 8th, 1994, their Seattle house.
Yeah, and a lot of rumor and innuendo is out there as to what really happened, but I think that's from people who can't accept that he was a torture genius, and they wanted more from him.
Yeah.
You know, they can't believe that he wouldn't do that because he had so much more music to make. Well, he did have a lot of music to make, but unfortunately he lost it all. That was another contributing factor. For those who don't know, after In Utero, he wrote like a bunch. He wrote like 100 new songs and wanted to keep them safe and kept them in the bathtub with his vintage guitar. And they had a sewer backup, ruined the guitar, and he lost all that music.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that was another thing that could have sent him over the edge.
Right.
Because he did, if there was one thing he loved in life, it was his music.
Yeah.
I mean, it was his family, but his music.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people to this day still won't accept the fact that it was a suicide.
No, there's
conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory that, you know.
And plus the staging was a little weird. But that's a whole episode unto itself.
Yes. I mean, you know,
we're not going to.
There's one way to trigger Nirvana fans. You ready? All you got to say is one phrase.
I'm going to cut you.
Drummer did it.
Mm-mm.
No, I'm joking. I that's not serious.
One of these days, I was going to say one of these days you can have Greg and I debate how all this went down, but I don't think that's going to go well because we're on vastly two different. I love Greg. Don't get me wrong. We're on this issue. If I'm not mistaken, Greg is very anti-Courtney in this.
I think so. I'll get with him next time I record with him and I'll find out.
Okay. We shall see. But I know he's a huge Kurt fan.
Yeah, he's a huge Nirvana fan.
Yes. So, to the Gen Xers.
He was the spokesperson. American Gen Xers, he was the spokesperson.
Yeah.
I mean, we could tell you where we were when we found out that he died. There's very few people, like, people know where they were when Kennedy died.
Yes.
Certain people could tell you where they were when John Lennon died. There's a, like, my generation, a good chunk of us could tell you where we were when we found out that Kurt died.
They closed Seattle schools, didn't they?
They closed a lot of schools nationwide, at least for the day, because people were, because they filmed that morning and they announced it, and teenagers were, I mean,
they couldn't concentrate. They were distraught.
Crying in the hallways. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it was horrible. Yeah. So it was,
I mean, he was the front man and songwriter of the biggest and most important band in the world at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, people thought that, you know, it had the same impact that Lennon's death had. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, to a certain generation, a certain group of people.
Okay, certain generations. Okay, yeah, it's Lennon or even Elvis's death to a certain generation, a certain group of people. So, I mean, anytime it's sudden, and yeah, it's just, it breaks your heart. It absolutely breaks your heart. But, yeah,
Those are the people we lost during the 90s. This
not all, but there's a sizable chunk.
Sizable chunk. And look, this wasn't meant to be a trip down morbid lane.
Right.
It's, you know, let's look at the good that all these guys did.
The legacies they left behind.
I mean, I picked the ones that I picked specifically because of their legacies. You know, I mean, Freddie Mercury is considered one of the greatest singers of all time.
Right.
Kurt Cobain was the leader of one of the biggest bands of all time.
Right.
Eazy-E was a pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
So was Selena.
Mm-hmm.
Richie Edwards, one of the finest songwriters of a generation.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Hutchins was a wild man, but he made some decent music.
Yes.
I mean, his reputation as a wild man is why he's here, you know, and just like Frank Zappa and,
mm-hmm.
you know, they all had a place in people's lives.
Yes.
And every single one of these people on this list is somebody's favorite musician.
Yes.
Everyone. Even mm-hmm. even the dude from Milli Vanilli.
Yeah.
There's a Milli Vanilli fan out there who,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
whose death affected them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where we're going to close right now. Sarah, it was good to have you on board.
Thank you
for taking the trip down memory street and sharing some reminiscences of people who who deserve it.
Yes.
And
thank you for having me.
Yes. So I'll be back here in a couple of minutes. And
no, I apologize for my rambling, y'all.
No, it's fine. We need a rambling. But yeah, that's it for now. I'll be back here in a couple of minutes. Sarah will be back here in a couple of weeks. Sarah will actually be joining us for a rankings episode coming up.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'll get more into that here in a couple of minutes. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back here shortly.
Awesome.
Sincere thank you once again to Sarah Connolly for taking the time out of her busy day to finish talking with me about some of the musicians that we lost during the 90s. I know it was a good episode to record. It was a difficult episode to record, but I hope our tributes to everybody are worthy enough to be said. I know I went on a little bit about Richie Edwards last week. Sarah went on a little bit about Kurt Cobain, but just, you know, what they meant to music and everything like that. So, sincere thank yous all around. Next week, Greg Gregory is returning as we talk about a movie that made everybody scared to go above 50 miles an hour. The movie Speed. If you haven't seen it, I'll just need a refresher on it. It is on Tubi right now, so if you have a smart TV, Fire Stick, Apple TV thingy, you know, you can go ahead and watch it. It's absolutely free. All you got to do is just sit through a couple of commercials every couple of minutes. Oh no, commercials. How will they fund their operation? They need money. So I'm just one of the few people who doesn't mind commercials because I don't pay attention to them. So next week also sees the return of our Paper Mario stream. If you're listening to this recording, you'll know that yesterday I was out of town, and I'm probably still out of town as this time comes out. But we will be back next Saturday with more Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. Okay, I've been enjoying it. I've gotten some great feedback. You guys seem to be enjoying it too. So yeah, that's something that we're going to keep doing on and on. And that is it for this episode. Don't forget to check out becausewemenetwork.com. That's where you find all of our archives. Go check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. Those links are in our description. And of course, don't forget to check out Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music. That's where you'll find this very podcast and the other various podcasts that we do. And yeah, that is really it. I don't really have much to say. I know I waffled last week, so I'm just going to go ahead and close up with this line. How, when a hole's beautiful, when they're gorgeous. That's on my calendar today. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. So I'm just going to leave this here. Take it easy, everybody. Bye.